numbers are staggering. It's fair to say that the retained hydrocarbons in the source rock is significant.
The potential for shale oil production on the North Slope. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, April 25th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, villages bring in several spring whales. Barrow has landed five.
It lifts up your heart to see so many people smiling at you and congratulating you, and it's a very good start for Barrow this year.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Great Bear Petroleum this morning announced it is within a month of drilling up to six exploratory shale oil wells this summer on its holdings along the Dalton Highway. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
Great Bear's President Ed Duncan told the Senate Resources Committee that the goal of the test wells is to gather data the company will use to begin a pilot production operation early next year.
The plan of operations on file, well plans have been designed, redesigned, edited, improved, refined. We believe that the technical work program we have today is as good as we could have hoped for.
Duncan said Great Bear now has a venture agreement with Halliburton Oilfield Services Company for testing and analysis of the test wells in exchange for a quarter interest in the project. Preliminary geological studies indicate that success is likely. However, he said those tests could find an air ball, nothing to produce. But Duncan said the tests could also prove the resource potential is, quote, beyond game-changing.
The numbers are staggering. We won't go into the details necessarily, but it's fair to say that the retained hydrocarbons in the source rock is significant. Certainly could be on par with well in excess of the hydrocarbons actually contained in known traps.
Great Bear plans to be getting into full production by 2015. Duncan anticipates having as many as 200 wells a year, not seasonal, but year-round. The biggest problem Duncan sees right now is finding the tens of thousands of people to work in the new shale industry, as well as training them and finding accommodations for them to live. He says too many are leaving for jobs in North Dakota.
It's not a challenge that we can solve on our own. It's a giant challenge for the state of Alaska. We may all be willing to do everything we can from a technical perspective, but if we don't have people in the field to run the rigs, drill the wells, lay the pipe, weld the pipe, we're stuck.
The Resources Committee is currently studying Governor Parnell's plan to change the state's oil tax regime to encourage new oil production. Co-chair Joe Pascvan says other big shale developments around the country were done without any change in those states' tax structures.
I think that he is accurate in his conclusion that the uptick in production in Texas and the uptick in production in North Dakota is as a result of technology and pricing, and not as a consequence of any tax change.
Duncan updated legislators on one other change in Great Bear since his last report to them. Former Revenue Commissioner Pat Galvin has gone to work for the company. Galvin was the individual often credited as most responsible for creating the state's current oil tax system. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
The state is taking feedback on proposed new student achievement standards. Education Commissioner Michael Hanley is hosting meetings around the state and was in Fairbanks yesterday. The new standards will replace the current package developed in the mid-1990s and are designed to clarify what's expected of kids at each grade level. Hanley says they're based on a Common Core package developed by the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers.
One of the main reasons we reference them so heavily is because I recognize that no matter what standards we came up with in Alaska, we needed to prepare our kids at the same level of rigor that the rest of the country was preparing them, their children for, largely because those are the kids that our kids are going to be competing with.
Commissioner Hanley says the proposed standards for reading, writing, and math include some Alaska-specific alterations, but they do not reduce the level of rigor. He says the state has received a lot of feedback.
We've heard, why don't we just go to the Common Core, because everybody else is. In some cases, these standards are too hard. Why do our kids in rural Alaska need these rigorous standards? But we've had a lot of positive comments, a lot of positive feedback, both from the workforce and just from parents saying, good, thank you for raising the bar.
The new standards were developed with input from select teachers from around the state, including staff from University of Alaska Fairbanks Education Department. Assistant Professor Annie Armstrong says the standards challenge students with mastering essential skills like writing a multi-paragraph essay.
It's very specific in that the five-paragraph essay should be based around a point of view or a thesis, and it should have support in each paragraph. And that went all the way down to sixth grade.
UAF Education Interim Dean Alan Murado says the bar is set high to get students going early on skills they need to master by graduation. He says that's not currently the case with many Alaska kids entering UAF.
We find that a lot of students coming in right now need to take one or more of the developmental classes in mathematics or writing English, and hopefully this will help counteract that trend.
Not all students are college-bound, but achieving a certain level of proficiency is still important. Evelyn Edson, program director for Joel's Place, AmeriCorps' program for at-risk youth in Fairbanks, says she hopes new standards provide better structure for kids who need support.
I see a lot of kids who don't know how to do basic life skills as far as writing their resume, filling out an application to go in and get a job, and having the confidence that they know they have the skills to do it.
The Alaska Board of Education is scheduled to consider approval of the new standards at a meeting in June. If the governor signs off on the capital budget, the University of Alaska Fairbanks can move forward with plans for the renovation and construction of a new engineering building on campus. The university says enrollment in the engineering program has doubled over the past 5 years. As KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, the new facility will keep the program competitive.
A line in the state's finalized capital budget for fiscal year 2013 provides $46.3 million for a new facility at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Doug Gehring is the dean of the College of Engineering and Mines.
Almost all of that will go into completing the design and doing a lot of the site prep work, and then starting this will actually, I think, lead to start of construction.
Eventually, the new complex will connect two existing buildings. Faculty and staff from Engineering and Mines will also combine resources with the School of Management.
I mean, there's just a whole bunch of connections where it makes sense to have engineers and folks from economics and business talking to one another, whether it's resource utilization effectively or new product design, business marketing plans, you know, innovation of products in the marketplace.
Plans include what Gehring calls a high bay area with see-through glass walls, a large open floor, and a few shops for civil engineering projects. The bay will become one of the tallest structures on campus, blocking a view of the Alaska Range that some faculty members currently have. However, Gehring says the loss is worth it.
The whole idea is to make engineering visible. And so, you know, these are engineering professors looking out. If I had my druthers, I think I'd just as soon, although the mountains are beautiful, don't get me wrong, but, you know, looking out into a large engineering facility that's got activity and, you know, a strong wall down below and maybe a vehicle that the students are working on, that, you know, that's also pretty compelling.
Gehring says the new facility makes engineering at UAF more competitive. He adds it provides an opportunity to expand.
The one thing that we're contemplating right now is actually expanding into chemical engineering. There's no chemical engineering program in the state right now, and actually this building would add some laboratory provisions for being able to do that.
Governor Parnell still has line item veto power, but if he signs off, Gehring says groundbreaking could happen a year from now. The new building is slated to open in 2015. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, tribal advocates are upset over a mistake in a reauthorization bill.
The people are really sick and tired of being exempt from protections that are extended to tribes in the lower 48.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
The Anchorage Election Commission just released their report on the April 3rd municipal election. They're asking the Assembly to adopt their report and certify the election, but they did find some problems and made several recommendations. KSKA's Daisha Eaton is at City Hall and joins us now. Hi, Daisha.
Hi, Lori.
Daisha, what problems did the commission identify?
Well, the commission interviewed 56 voters over two meetings on Saturday and Monday and reviewed 182 emails that were submitted to the municipality, and they found several problems, including long lines and people weren't able to wait in them to vote, sample or photocopied ballots that deterred voters, and people that just didn't try to vote because people told them that there were no more ballots while they were outside the voting precinct, and several other reasons.
Well, what did the commission say about the ballot shortages?
Well, they made several recommendations. They said that when the ballots were ordered, a formula of 70% of registered voters per precinct should be employed, not merely 70% overall. And that's because they found that in some precincts they didn't have enough ballots. And also, they ran short. They miscalculated supplies and ran short of two crucial card numbers, card number 2 and 4. There are many cards used throughout the municipality, and card numbers 2 and 4 ran out.
What are a few of the recommendations that they're making?
Well, they recommended that they order 70% overall of ballots rather than just 70% not 70% overall, but 70% for each precinct. And also that the municipal clerk take a more active role in strategic planning, supervising ballot ordering, training of staff, and general oversight. They also said that there needs to be a restructuring of office personnel that occurs before another election, with the hiring of additional election-specific personnel, such as a coordinator and a recruiter. They made 9 recommendations overall.
Daisha, the commission isn't calling for a new election. Why not?
Well, they say that although the ballot shortage did create chaos during the final hours of the election, the problem did not meet the standards of malconduct, fraud, or reckless indifference on the part of anyone involved. And they are not recommending a new election or an independent investigation. They are recommending that the Assembly adopt their report and certify the election.
And is it known when the Assembly will look at that?
It looks like they have set certification for next week. I believe it's this coming Thursday. There'll also be a regular assembly meeting on Tuesday.
All right. Thank you. KSKA's Daisha Eaton reporting live from City Hall. Alaska tribal advocates are upset by a section in the federal reauthorization of the 2000 Violence Against Women Act. Section 905 of the act would expand tribal court jurisdiction by allowing those courts to issue protective orders against any person, including non-Native offenders. That expansion, in the eyes of Congress, was a problem in Alaska, where the legal status known as Indian Country does not exist as it does on lower 48 reservations. The expansion was meant for those tribes, not Alaska's. that caused language to be added that would have exempted Alaska's tribes from even their current jurisdiction over their members. Senators Murkowski and Bagich are working on a fix, something called a savings clause that will retain the current authority for tribal courts in Alaska. Native American Rights Fund attorney Natalie Landreth says removing the exemptions is important, but the fact that the exemption was there at all is disturbing.
We've seen Alaska exemptions in federal law. I've seen them for going on 10 years. The rest of the Native community has been watching them for more than 30 years. And I think looking at them in this law really struck a chord. Not only is it the absolute worst place to remove tribal authority, but people are really sick and tired of being exempt from protections that are extended to tribes in the lower 48. Alaska was and continues to be treated by Congress like they are the second-class citizens of the Native American community.
Indian country means land jurisdiction. Alaska tribes don't have that status, so to expand the authority here would mean new legislation and possibly public hearings. Natalie Landreth says over the last three decades, federal courts are moving away from land-based jurisdiction to membership and interest jurisdiction. And she says there is a misunderstanding of tribal courts in Alaska.
The most common argument I see is that people are concerned about subjecting citizens to tribal courts. Well, I think if they would spend a little bit of time with tribal courts and see how effective and, you know, how diverse they are and how they solve problems, I think people would really understand a lot better why it's an excellent resource, not only for the local community, but a great complement to state and federal law enforcement.
Although the fix being crafted by Murkowski and Bagich should take care of preserving Alaska tribal court authority, there's no guarantee the act will move out of the Senate by adjournment tomorrow. If it does pass, its fate is less certain in the House. Several Alaska whaling communities are celebrating successful spring hunts. Barrow, Whales, Gamble, and Savunga have all landed at least one bowhead. Barrow crews have five successful strikes. The Levitt crew, captained by Joseph Levitt, landed a 33-foot whale on Sunday. He says it's a satisfying accomplishment.
Everybody wants to smile at me and my family and our crew. It lifts up your heart to see so many people smiling at you and congratulating you, and it's a very good start for Barrow this year.
Levitt says the ice conditions have been good so far, but the leads are closing up.
People are out of the water leads right now. They're out of the leads. They pull back because the ice is starting to move in now.
According to the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission, Gamble and Savunga on St. Lawrence Island have taken 10 whales altogether, 4 in Gamble and 6 in Savunga. In the community of Whales, north of Nome, Captain Raymond Seatook, Sr., landed the first bowhead for the village since 2005. He says the whale is 34 feet long and was struck in late evening on April 19th. He says it took nearly 12 hours to tow the whale back to town.
We had to tow that whale among young ice, long ways, two and a half hours, 3 hours before we hit the shore ice. That young ice was a little bit thick sometimes. And that she had stopped 3 times because of that young ice gotten a little bit too thick.
Seatook says the weather and ice have been favorable this year, but that's not always the case near whales.
The reason why we don't get bowhead well every year is the weather and ice condition all the time.
Seatook says the community is preparing for a big celebration in early May, but he's already tasted the muktuk and meat from the whale and says it's very tender.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
The University of Alaska system will be getting a new state-of-the-art supercomputer in the next couple of months. The computer already has a name, Fish. KDLG's Mike Mason explains.
The new supercomputer should be installed sometime in June, and it will be housed at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Arctic Supercomputing Center in Fairbanks. The director of that center is Greg Newby.
What this system, Fish, will be used for is essentially modeling of the world that we live in, and to some extent the universe and other parts of the world that we don't live in. The idea is to determine through computational simulation what could happen or maybe what happened in the past. And these are things that we couldn't easily observe or that we can't easily forecast or extrapolate without this computational power. Things like oceanography, weather, climate modeling, and of course things having to do with fisheries, which is part of why we named the system Fish. So things like the salinity of the ocean and the temperature and the ice cover, things like that.
The new supercomputer is a Cray XK6M. Cray is the leading manufacturer of supercomputers in the United States. The computer and all of its components cost about $600,000, and the purchase was funded primarily through grants from the National Science Foundation. Newby says Fish was chosen as the name of the new supercomputer through an auction.
We every year have an entry in what's called the BISBE, which is the Alaska Literacy Council's annual fundraiser. And so we auctioned off the right to name the system, and the winning bid chose Fish for the reasons that I mentioned, because it's important to Alaska. And it's something that we do quite a lot of research for. So we had sort of a contest here locally, and that was the winning name.
The supercomputer will have a total theoretical peak system performance that is calculated at over 41 teraflops. That basically translates to over 40 trillion mathematical calculations every second. Newby says Fish will most likely be the most powerful supercomputer in the state of Alaska.
There are some other pretty big systems that are operated by the state in Alaska, and there are a couple of industries that have computers. But for the most part, even though the oil and aviation industry, for example, operate far larger computers, those are not actually in Alaska. So Boeing would have theirs probably down in Seattle, and oil services probably in Houston, that sort of thing. So yeah, this will probably be the biggest supercomputer in Alaska. It's the biggest one that I'm aware of.
The new supercomputer will be housed in two large cabinets in the Arctic Region Supercomputing Center. Those cabinets will feature artwork depicting the life cycle of salmon created by an art student at UAF. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
An organization that focuses on volunteerism will be in five Northwest villages this summer, renovating Boys and Girls Club buildings. Hope Worldwide is an international faith-based group that helps match up local and AmeriCorps volunteers with communities in need. The group will be conducting what they call Arctic Regeneration Camps in villages, blending leadership training and mentoring for young people with the work of sprucing up clubs. Ray Naden is the chapter executive for Hope Worldwide in Alaska. He says the organization began renovating village clubhouses a few years ago.
And we thought, we'll renovate and we'll work with the youth in the community while we're there and hopefully get them involved with some of that as well. So that's been great. Last year we went to Kotzebue and then we sent two different teams to Norvik and Selawik as well and worked on the clubhouses as well as ran day camps and that for the youth in the community. So it was great. It was really good to get them involved and to help the clubhouse get updated and so that it can be used on a regular basis.
And do you just select different communities each year, or do you go back to some of the same communities?
Well, Kotzebue, we are going back to hopefully finish the job there. And again, it's like anything. It's all about funding and where Boys and Girls Club and ourselves can get funding, and then we can go there and help out the community. All of our people are volunteers, you know, so as we go, we all go to volunteer and work there. And this year we'll be going to Kivalina, replacing doors, windows, building an Arctic entry so it's more usable year-round. And we would love to be able to go back to Norvik this year and Selawik and Wainwright. And a lot of that does just depend on the type of support or funding that we can get.
Beyond replacing doors and sprucing up things, what do the Arctic regeneration camps involve? What are young people going to be doing?
Well, we have a leadership in sports, and we also have this arts and entertainment. We do a thing called Story Tree Gang, and Story Tree Gang is a puppet show in a sense. It's a skit, and the skit represents good choices that we want the youth to make, but we get them involved with it. They actually train, and then they put on the performance. And our goal is that that can start to reproduce itself, meaning that they, too, will then put these on and send good messages throughout the communities. And I think that's important, again. So arts and entertainment, again, the leadership piece. And we're also a part of AmeriCorps, and we would love to engage a number of the young adults in AmeriCorps and take them out, serve in another community, and then take that serving home. So we do have some young adults that are interested, and hopefully we can make that happen next year, which would be great.
Information about the HOPE Worldwide program says that founders believe in empowerment, not enabling.
Mm-hmm.
What does this mean?
You know, we want, again, to be able to equip, give skills, also help people believe, you know, that they can accomplish more, that they can make a difference. And I think by us going there and actually making a physical difference, as well as giving them and some more leadership or choice decision skills, it does empower them to be able to make wiser choices, but not just for themselves, but for others in the community as well, in a mentorship type way.
Are you, when you're looking for mentors, are you looking to recruit mentors in the community, or are you bringing folks in? How does that work?
Eventually, we would love to be able to train local mentors. Right now, our 20 AmeriCorps workers that are coming up come from all over the U.S. We had over 200 applicants and 20 got chosen to come to Alaska. So they'll be training for 4 weeks actually in Philadelphia working with inner city youth, and then they're going to be coming up here for a couple weeks and going to the villages. So it's going to be they're a great crew. Last year we had a great group of young adults that can really pass on a diversity of lessons and insights and skills.
HOPE Worldwide is a faith-based charity. Is there a religious component to the camps?
No. We are a faith-based organization, but we really try to separate that out. A number of the volunteers come from religious backgrounds, but again, what we want to do is volunteer and serve, and that's the agenda and that's the goal.
Ray Nadun is with the HOPE Worldwide chapter in Alaska. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, and Mike Mason in Dillingham. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
And by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.